Let's get to Terry Savage now on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hi, Terry.
Hello. I like what you're doing today.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can be charitable about investments, too.
Yeah, it's funny because once upon a time, I think as an incentive to donate to a charity, people would itemize and deduct it on their taxes. And a lot of that incentivization has been lost, isn't it?
Because there's such a high standard deduction, your accountant's going to say, yeah, you know, good thing you gave, but you still want to take the standard deduction. But all the studies I've seen say that Americans are so generous. In 2023, according to Giving USA, Americans gave more than $550 billion, more than $500 billion dollars to charities. And some got deductions, some didn't. And it hasn't really, since the changing of increasing the standard deduction, supposedly to make it easier to file, but actually to keep you from having lots of ways to dodge taxes.
Oh, really?
It has not really impacted charitable giving. So we give because we want to help.
Yeah, no kidding. And in fact, then the individual taxpayer is coming out ahead with a higher standard deduction then, right?
Well, that's true. Yeah, but people, they were worried. I remember when the bill passed that, oh my goodness, gifts to charities will stop now that people will no longer, you know, be getting receipts and deducting them. It just hasn't happened.
And it also
eliminates. And I'm glad our listeners are part of that.
I'm not surprised that they are. I'll give that phone number again. If you're just joining us, it's 844-361-8400. And the operators are there until 1. I know some of you got a busy signal when you called earlier. Maybe you won't now. 844-361-8400. That's 844-361-8400. Let's move on now, Terry. What's foremost on your mind? Markets are even, but still doing well. I keep wondering if Dr. Bob is going to land at 44 for the end of the year.
Well, it didn't. I just want you to know it didn't have to be ending at 44,000. It was just that it was going to hit 44,000.
Oh.
So he's a winner no matter what.
Yes.
You know, it was a great headline. I mean, I was talking with Lisa Dent yesterday afternoon when someone calculated that it goes back to 1978 that we had 9 down days in a row. But, I mean, basically we're down a little over 3.5% from the highs. The S&P is still at the highs. NASDAQ is at new highs. And the fact is that we can attribute much of that decline in the Dow to United Healthcare, about which now everybody knows what that means. But not only about the problems of managed care, but about the new administration's likelihood of dealing with these pharmacy benefits managers to bring down the cost of prescription drugs. So all that would impact profits. But the fact is, we're still up substantially. And let's talk about the stock market, not thinking about, well, today or after the Fed speaks. But this is a perfect time. It's a very quiet moment now. You've got another, 10 trading days or so till the end of the year. Just think about this. You're up probably, I mean, if you just were in the S&P 500 index fund, the old Terry Savage mantra, you don't have to beat the market, just be the market. You're up about 25% this year, a whole lot last year. And anybody who looks at their 401k statement says, I'm rich. I mean, oh, look at that. I never thought I'd have this much money. But 2 years ago, you said, okay, I want to allocate so much to stocks, so much to more conservative things, bonds or maybe equity income funds, a little more conservative. And now your portfolio is way overbalanced in stocks. So it's okay if you're younger and you're going to ride through a bunch more market cycles. But if you're approaching retirement or are in retirement, you have to say, oh, you know, it was going to be 50% stocks or 60, and now it's like 82% stocks. What if a bear market came along? We have not ruled those out, even though we haven't had one in a long time. That's a bear market, officially only 20% decline. As I've said many times, I've lived through three that were 50% or nearly 50% in my investing lifetime. And how would you feel if the market, if your account was going down at about 20, 25% in value? So this is the perfect time to sit there and say, okay, pigs get fat and hogs get slaughtered. I think I will rearrange a little bit. And if you're in an IRA, move some to a money market account. You don't get rich there. You don't get poor either, though. And just take a little off the table.
A minute ago, I was asking Terry Savage, when is the market going to peak before it goes down to one of these 20% bear market numbers. And I'm not asking you to give me the peak, but here's what I'm asking, because I know that's silly. But I just wonder, do you think that that the next 3 or 4 years are going to still be positive? And I don't think that's asking too much.
John, I'm always positive about the economy and the market. I'm actually most positive. That's when I find that I'm a little bit more in demand when the market is crashing, because I know from history that we always recover. The economy always resumes its upward path, but it shakes a lot of people up and shakes a lot of people out when they're living on the edge and when they have counted their chickens and when their nest egg is cracking and all the kinds of things that I say in bear markets. So am I annoyed that all my chicken money was sitting on the sidelines these past 3 years and I was kind of thrilled that it was earning 4.5% and I missed out on 30-40% in the S&P 500 funds that are in my retirement account? Absolutely. But I you never know, John. And so the point is, I sleep better at this stage of my life. Mm-hmm. But at a young stage, I mean, you know, when I was, I believed in that. Just buy the index fund. I'm just putting my contribution in S&P fund. That was it. And boy, did that work out well over the long run. So it doesn't matter until either A, you need the money. And then you go, oops, it used to be X hundred thousand, now it's only half of that or two-thirds of that. Or B, you don't need it, but you realize you're going to need it, and you go, oh my goodness, my lifestyle just diminished by 20%, and I don't have 8-9 years to make it up. That's when it becomes painful.
The Fed has is going to make an announcement in about 40 minutes, and we'll find out if it goes up a quarter point, and everybody thinks they will. I don't suppose there'll be much of a reaction to that, Terry?
Well, everybody, quote, knows that they're going to cut rates, another quarter of a percent. But I don't, and the market has priced that in. And I'm certainly not smarter than the market. The great disappointment would be if they said, inflation remains strong. We'll have a CPI number later this week. It hasn't come down to our 2% level. It's kind of hanging in there. We're pretty pleased with the fact that everybody who wants one has a job, more or less. People are groaning when they hear that, but the statistics show it that way. And maybe they just might long shot say, we're going to take another look at it after the Christmas holiday season. That's unlikely. Everybody in the markets are where money puts its mouth, says, they're going to cut another quarter of a point. So what they're going to look at is that press conference, which I'll be listening to, and I'll come back on if you and Pete want, if they say something very unusual about changing their outlook for next year, because they're going to reveal their survey of where they think things will be next year. But basically, it's built in, a quarter of a point cut. Maybe it'll help mortgage rates come down. They've popped back up a little bit. Long-term rates have stayed a little bit stubbornly higher than short-term rates.
Yeah.
And that's because someone out there is fearful of locking money up for 10 years, lest inflation impact the returns.
BMO has a survey out that said more than a quarter of Americans plan to cut back their spending next year. I wonder sometimes when they ask people, how do you feel about the economy, or what are your plans, or what do you think you're going to do? I don't think they know. I don't know, but I'd like to cut back my spending next year. I don't know. What do you read into this?
Well, BMO has this Real Financial Progress Index, which is a pretty sophisticated survey. Of course, I don't know. Have you been talking on the show about holiday spending plans? Because in the olden days, when I used to be on TV every year, the day after Thanksgiving, I would be out at some shopping mall doing a live shot saying, and the surveys show that the spending will be up 3% or up 4%. I haven't heard a lot about that. And this survey says over half, 53% of Americans say they feel financial stress over their holiday spending. And get this, American parents in particular are concerned about holiday spending. 2 in 3 Americans, 67% of Americans with children in their household, report anxiety over the cost of the holidays. And a third of them, 35% of parents with children in their household, say they will need at least 4 months to pay off their holiday debt. Now, okay, if you know that, I mean, I don't know, maybe it's too late to say to everybody. Everybody thinks that happy days are here again, but a lot of things could impact the economy. You know, the tariffs hanging out there, there's global political, geopolitical things. I mean, please stop right now. Come up with a promise. Come up with a card for your kids that every month you're going to get, you know, a trip to McDonald's for a Happy Meal or something like that, that's not going to have you paying off credit card debt at what is still extraordinarily high rates for 3 or 4 months into the new year. I know I sound like Cassandra or Cratchity Annie telling you not to do that. We haven't discussed this at all. But here's a BMO survey that says people know they're worried, and yet they're still spending.
The average American expects to spend $550 on gifts over the holidays, and many think that that will not go as far as it has in previous years. Seems to me like $550, you could end up spending on one item for a kid when you consider consumer electronics. But I wonder if, because a bicycle used to cost a lot of money, and a basketball, and some of the things maybe I would get, but they didn't cost $500. Of course, you made less money back then, too. I guess what I'm getting at is, I wonder, relative to income, if the cost of Christmas is more now or less than it used to be.
I'm sure there are surveys like that. Here's what we know. Incomes have sort of kept up with inflation, but it doesn't feel like that to most people, and that's exactly what our last presidential election said. You could not tell people, don't worry about it, because inflation has slowed to only 2.5% and the stock market's at all-time highs.
Yeah.
Because the fact of the matter is,
they weren't feeling
prices
it.
have not gone down. Yeah. And as we've said several times, we really don't want them to go back down. I mean, what would a world look like where gasoline was $1 a gallon and bicycles cost $39? It would mean that there was a total collapse of global trade, a huge recession. I mean, prices are not going back down, but we really hope that what they won't do is go up.
And that maybe wages will catch up with them. I had an idea for a commercial that Joe Biden or Kamala Harris could have run, and maybe nothing would have saved either of their candidacies. But my idea, it was a bunch of people that low in a valley, maybe a wagon train, and they are commiserating over the cost of everything and how hard their economic lives are. And over the hill, here comes the cavalry. And it's, you know, the Democratic candidate with a flag that says lower interest rates and higher wages and unemployment is down and the stock market is up. And here comes the cavalry. But they're not here yet. You know, they haven't saved us yet, but they're about to. But I don't know that that message would have changed the tide, or I don't know that it should have changed the tide. But I just wondered if that was maybe one way to visualize what the Democrats and the economy were up against. Times will feel better. They just don't yet. Social Security is also on Terry Savage's mind here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Terry, what are you thinking about there?
Okay, news flash.
Yes.
Earlier, a couple of days ago, the Social Security Fairness Act passed the House by a huge margin, over 300 to under 100. That is the act that is designed to repeal something called the WEP and the GPO. If you have a public pension, police, fire, teachers, and so forth, even though you qualified for Social Security benefits because before you were a teacher or after you were a teacher, you got the required quarters and you should be getting a nice Social Security benefit. When they reformed Social Security in the early 80s, late 70s, in case of the government pension offset, they said, no, if you get a pension from a public body like the teachers or something like that, police, your Social Security check is going to be reduced. It's long been considered very unfair. So a bipartisan group got together to repeal that, and it passed the House. It is, as we speak, being discussed by the Senate leadership. Now, why wouldn't we want to just give everybody their full Social Security benefit? I mean, you can have a pension from a company as well and get your full Social Security benefit, just not from the government. Well, it's going to be costly, and it might bring the funding level of the Social Security trust funds down by a year. And all the conservative Republicans are sitting there saying, we're not going to pass this Fairness Act unless we also do something like raise the retirement age to 70. Now, I will say this, you know, nobody's a bigger fan of Social Security and getting it right than I am. But if they would do that now, just the way they did in the 80s, raise it gradually to 67, which we are finally just approaching, if they would start way in advance for younger people, it would make perfect sense to increase the retirement age and thus the funding for Social Security over the long run. Not if you're listening and you're 62, you won't suddenly find it going to 70. But because Social Security has always been considered the third rail of politics, no one wants to touch it. Even the president-elect has said, I'm not doing anything except getting it better organized. There's a big debate going on in the Senate. And there's some pressure because if they keep debating this and stalling, they're going to run up against a deadline that's Friday for the government funding bill. Okay, so there's a lot of political stuff going on now around Social Security. My message to, and a bunch of people emailed me about it, it's going to pass, it's going to pass.
Yeah.
I was going to say, don't hold your breath.
What do you think the solution is, Terry?
I know what the solutions are, and nobody likes them. And I've been working around Social Security with the great economist Larry Kotlikoff for the last few years now. The first solution is we need to lift the cap on how much of your income is taxed for Social Security. There's a cap, I forget what it'll be for this year, but around $170,000. After that, you know, your paycheck increases because if you earn that much more, you're not having a deduction for Social Security, FICA taken out. We need to lift that cap. We need to delay the retirement age. Those two things alone would go a long, long way if we would do them now when we are 10 years away from the moment when the trust funds won't be able collect enough in a year to fully pay the benefits. They will fix it. There are too many of us oldish folks collecting Social Security. So it's a big political thing. But come on, guys, face it.
If they raised the cap or eliminated it, say, and said you paid into Social Security for every dollar you ever earn, your millionth dollar, would that increase the benefits when those people are receiving Social Security benefits? For those individuals?
Well, your Social Security benefit is not based
on how much you put in,
how much you contributed. It's based on a formula that looks at your earnings.
Yeah.
So that's not, you're going to get more because there's always a cost of living adjustment and because salaries go up, so the formula would increase your basic benefit. But we're talking about making Social Security solvent. They are edging up to it. I can understand the conservatives saying, wait, you want to give all these people? Yeah, because they paid into Social Security, they had covered earnings, you're not giving them the full benefit just because they work for the school board or the police department or something like that. So there's this great, positive motion for all the representatives. Our constituents want us to do away with this weapon, GPO. But if the conservatives demand either a delay in the retirement age or something else, it's just going to get bogged down.
Maybe you've answered this question then. I'm a retired teacher who's getting ready to take my Social Security. From what I see, I think I should wait until this GPO and WPE is straightened out so my TRS doesn't reduce Social Security. Your thoughts?
Okay, well, number one, this is very complex, so I'm going to send you to MaximizeMySocialSecurity.com. Until you start taking your pension or your 403B account, until you start withdrawing from it, it's not counted as an offset against your Social Security check. This is a very weird thing that we describe in our book, Social Security Horror Stories. So to the extent that it's there, but you aren't starting to withdraw from it, it won't impact your current Social Security benefits.
I see.
In general, it's always better to wait till age 70 to take Social Security. I'm not going to have that argument again. I've had it at over dinner. I've had it at home.
You've had it here.
I'm not going to get there.
Okay.
I know I'm right, but the fact is, I just don't hold your breath is what I'm saying about when they're going to get this quote sorted out.
Hello, it is Maya. Is it smart to cancel my life insurance since my children are adults and can support themselves?
Aha. I know you're not listening to all the commercials that run all over the media saying, don't cancel your life insurance, sell it. It may have some value, even a term policy. Part of it is what's the cash value, if there is cash value in your insurance policy? What else could you do with the money if it's been building up cash? In the olden days, people used to buy life insurance in trusts held outside their estate to pay the estate taxes. Doesn't look like that's going to be an issue in the next 4 years. So you need to consult with someone who's independent, fiduciary, not trying to sell you
a policy.
But
what do you think of a permanent insurance as an investment?
Well, it depends on what kind of permanent insurance, because most people that are asking this question now bought something like variable life insurance mm-hmm. over the years, which was very affordable. And now as you get older, the premiums were supposed to be paid out of the gains
yep.
on your investments, and there's not enough in there, and suddenly it's cannibalizing your policy. If you go to terrysavage.com and look up life insurance, you'll find a really great article I wrote about that. You need an independent life insurance review to, number one, find out, does it make sense to keep paying the premiums? Do you really need the insurance? What's the cash value? And don't just answer one of these numbers. How much could I get for my life insurance? They look at your age and your stage in life. They keep the policy going, and now you've got somebody betting, you know, wanting to put a banana peel under your foot. I mean, the incentive is they want you to die sooner than actuarially expected. That's how they decide what to pay you for those policies.
Right.
So you got to have someone you trust review your entire financial picture, and whether this life insurance still makes sense as a policy, and whether it's still needed.
Okay,
it's
but that's not a hard
yes or no.
But that, well, and it's not a hard no. And some people, and I'm glad to hear you say at least that. Let's pick it up here in a minute. Terry Savage on the Wintrust Business Lunch, the Money Lady, the syndicated financial columnist at terrysavage.com. We've got more business news for you right now. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. New York developer 601W, the owner of the old post office in Chicago, reportedly has a purchase contract for the 30-story office building at 303 East Wacker. Crane says the purchase price has not been disclosed, but people familiar with the deal say it could be about $63 million. Seller Beacon Capital Partners bought the building in 2018 for $182 million and spent $32 million on renovations and upgrades. 303 recently lost engineering firm AECOM and the U.S. Soccer Federation, which is moving to Atlanta. The building is 77% leased and is also home to WGN Radio and parent Nexstar Media Group. Some Connie's frozen pizzas are being recalled because they may be contaminated with plastic. The recall involves about 1,700 thin crust frozen cheese pizzas, which were sold at grocery stores in Illinois, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. Pizzas have an expiration date of November 27th and are no longer on store shelves. So far, no illnesses have been reported. If you have one, you should throw it out or return it for a full refund. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
This is the Business of Food Now with Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And let's talk about those drones, the big ones over New Jersey. Rich McHugh is a News Nation reporter. He saw them.
Yeah, I did. And I got to say, I'm rattled.
And while we may not know what they were, an Illinois drone operator says he knows what they were not.
I do not think these are agricultural spray drones.
More from him after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in Santa's toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, about these mystery drones, supposedly the size of Volkswagen Beetles?
I would like the listeners to understand that they are not part of the agricultural industry, even though that is the same size of drone that we use.
That's Mark Black, co-owner of KT Precision Ag, which flies drones over farm fields from I-80 all the way down to the tip of Illinois. We first talked with Mark 3 years ago.
So since then, in the United States, the agricultural drone business has exploded in growth.
Mark and his co-founder, Matt Brooks, have sprayed more than 7,000 acres this year with their drones and another 1,000 acres spreading seeds for cover crops.
We were one of the first 50 in the nation to be doing this, and one of the first 5 in Illinois to be approved to be able to do this.
He says drones are a lot different now than when they started.
Everything is bigger and badder and faster and so much more efficient.
And regarding bigger?
Our agricultural spray drones are about 8 to 10 feet across. Well, there's your small Volkswagen like they're talking about.
And with the FAA allowing more nighttime flying,
we have a waiver to be able to fly at night. People aren't used to seeing larger drones flown at night. I can tell you right now, if somebody was to watch us spray a few of the fields we did this year, they would think it was a UFO flying across the field at 50 feet in the air.
But again, regarding those New Jersey drones,
I do not think these are agricultural spray drones.
You can see what Mark and Matt are up to at ktprecisionag.com. From the farm to your belly, today's National Roast Suckling Pig Day. Don't forget the apple. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Harry Savage is on with us for a few more minutes here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Ready for more questions, Terry?
Yeah. I just want to point out two things. Time's running out. We told people not to go crazy on Christmas shopping. My latest column at terrysavage.com, that list of holiday money gifts for kids, getting started on investing, a Fidelity Young Investor account, that Money Savvy Piggy Bank, a great book, and so forth. That's all on there. Down two columns is the gift of a 529 plan, the Illinois Bright Start plan. You can still do that online. Those are sensible gifts for children and grandchildren. And right in between those is my latest column on IRMA, the adjustment to your Medicare premium, which I think a lot of people have been writing to me about. So that's all up there on terrysavage.com.
My wife and I both retired and have pensions that cover about two-thirds of our expenses. Would you recommend a 50-50 split of stocks to fixed income for what's in our retirement accounts?
But I don't know that. Look, I'm going to here's my greatest gift to you for the new year. It is called the gift of confidence for serious financial planning that is not coming from someone trying to sell you anything. At least get matched with a fee-only fiduciary financial advisor. That would be like you calling me up and saying, I have a fever. Should I take Tylenol or do I need an antibiotic? Wait, what? Well, we have to do a blood test. We have to see. We have to know where you've been exposed. You need a fee-only fiduciary to review the entire picture. You can find one at WealthRamp.com. Go to terrysavage.com. On the top it says, find your trusted financial advisor. I get nothing, not a zero zilch out of you clicking through on this to meet with Pam Kruger, who created WealthRamp. We do a podcast together. She's become a friend. She's like me. She wants to help people. The financial advisors, if they have a new client, do reimburse her, but they don't raise their fees to do that out of your first year's fee. These are fee-only advisors. She will understand what you need, where you are in life. She will give you two or three to meet with, to have a conversation with. She doesn't give them your name. No one calls you.
Right.
You call them. WealthRamp.com. That's my holiday gift to you to start the new year right, because I can't do that for you over the phone or even on your blog posts. You need someone who you trust, and you got to start out with someone who is a fiduciary, putting your interest first.
Short answer for this one, Terry. Can I put a stop on my 401k and just freeze it and it stays the same?
No, life doesn't freeze. I mean,
could you liquidate it and just put it in cash or something like that?
Well, here's the thing. I know you want me to quit because we're down at the end of the show, but look, your 401k plan only has certain investment options. And typically, the 401k plan is designed with investment options for younger workers who need to grow their money and can ride out the tough times. So if you're still working, you have to stick with your 401k plan. You can't just roll it out. So look for the most conservative options in the plan. Your 401k plan consultant probably has advisors available to you to talk about that. But if you left your 401k plan behind because you loved it and it was easier and that was okay and it was low cost and now you're retired, go to terrysavage.com. In the search box under columns, put rollover now. It gives you instructions on how to do a direct rollover to a place like Fidelity or Vanguard where you can say, whoops, I'm older. I've got a lot of money now. I want to move 30% into a money market fund. There's no tax consequence to diversifying inside your IRA. It'll all come out as ordinary income anyway.
Ding, ding, ding.
Ding, ding, ding. Sorry, end of show, but you always get the savage truth from me.